Welcome to another episode of Dead Review with Dummies. And by dummies, we refer to your hosts. I am Corey, the dummiest dummy.
And I'm Zach. I'm so dumb that that time I got locked in the mattress store, I ended up sleeping on the floor.
Zach, what is Dead Review with Dummies?
Corey, we like to talk about debt review. So we talk to people who've been through the process. We talk to people who are involved in the process, and we discuss how the process can benefit you. So today we're going to focus in on talking to someone who's involved in the process of debt review one way or another.
Yeah, I think we're chatting to someone from the NCR. So Zach, what or who is the NCR?
So it's an acronym, NCR, standing for National Credit Regulator. They're the people who basically in charge of the credit industry in South Africa. So they do things like they register people who want to be part of the industry, like credit providers or debt counselors. They check up on people to make sure they're doing their jobs. So they do what's called monitoring. And if they're naughty, they make sure they get a hiding or they get sorted out one way or another. So they do enforcement too. And they're an integral part of the industry. And we don't often get a chance to hear too much of what happens behind the scenes. So I'm excited to talk to today's guest because she's someone who can really share some interesting insights and talk to us a little bit about debt review.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have Louise Page with us today. Thank you very much for joining us today on this podcast. We appreciate you spending some time with these dummies. Let's fire away. Tell us who you are.
Well, thank you, Corey. Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be on your show. So I am Louise Page. I am a qualified attorney. I'm a legal advisor currently at the National Credit Regulator in the debt counseling department specifically. My journey with the credit industry began long ago, even before I started practicing as an attorney. While I was still doing law school, I worked for Octogen, back in the day when Tony and Paul were still involved. And then when I started practicing eventually, I mainly did family law, but I never let go of debt counseling. Always had debt counseling matters in court. I was in court almost weekly with debt review matters up until I came to work for the NCR. So I came to work for the NCR very similar for the reason why I became a lawyer in the first place. It's because I saw how easily people were being taken advantage of. People that didn't have proper support or didn't have legal understanding, how easily people could be abused in the financial sector. So although I haven't been on debt review myself, my role has brought me very intimately close to the business. I'm involved with so many queries and complaints that touches people's personal lives, how it impacts them, how it affects them, and how there's always like a sense of urgency with their issues. But the debt review does work. If it's done right, it does work. People must just understand the commitment and like it will change you. Like we've success stories, I'll touch on that a bit later, but we've seen how it can transform people's lives for the better. Unfortunately, that's currently not what we're seeing so much in the industry, but that's why we're all working together to try and get that to be the consistent.
So I get the feeling, Louise, that you, when you go to sleep at night, you don't dream about your kids or holidays in Tahiti. You dream about debt review.
Yeah. Daunting interviews with crazy people. Yeah.
Okay. What do you do on a daily basis? I mean, what does a day for Louise look like at the NCR in the average week?
Okay. So a typical day for me would be to interpret the act or the regulations or the lack thereof, to respond to complex legal queries, complaints, gaps where people don't know where to navigate, how to handle the situations, what do we do in these circumstances, and you take variables into consideration to path a way forward. So I work a lot on complaints, some straightforward, some very highly nuanced. Assist with compliance monitoring that the monitoring officers attend to mostly. The letters that the DCs receive on these monitors are reviewed by me, and that helps me to keep an ear on the ground to see what is happening on the ground. Then I'm also involved in compliance notices. When there is persistent non-compliance, it escalates to a non-compliance process. So I'm very much involved with that. And then the enforcement part as well, when matters are being referred to the National Consumer Tribunal, that will also be my department, and I love to do that. I also review the exam papers and the assignments that the students write when they do the registration for a debt counselor. And then I sit on internal committees within the NCR, provide legal opinions such as the Section 1035 and Duplo matter that was recently in court. Just basically balancing consumers and credit providers or other stakeholders. Yeah, just try to smooth things over.
Louise, right in the beginning of this, you said interpreting the act. Now, I think that's quite a relative statement because you interpret it differently to what I interpret. Can you kind of give it an example of what you meant by that?
Well, interpreting is basically to say when a circumstance arises or a scenario situation arises, what would be the best course of action to take? So then you would go and look at what the act says, what does the act state, or what is it that what it does not say? And it's usually not just in one place, it's in various places, or it's also sometimes in case law or in the regulations or one of our guidelines. So you have to go and find all these resources and take bits and pieces from each of them together, a solution to whatever we have now, or to see what is the best course of action, how to proceed on that. Is that kind
And
of.
you mentioned that you help out with the complaints kind of side of things, especially when it comes to then trying to resolve those. I'm sure some of those things are quite complicated, obviously. What's the thing that the NCR gets the most, though?
Complaints. Look, most of the complaints, like vast majority, obviously go to the complaints department, and they will draw up an Excel spreadsheet, if you will. Often they say they will have a list of debt counselors and credit providers, because they also do complaints for credit providers, on who has the most complaints and what are those complaints about. So we can, for example, look at ABC debt counselor if he is on the list and what he's on the list for. So you'll have there like a top 10 or a top 15, and those are then the guys that we look at when we do our annual investigations. So we see a lot of complaints here. There's a gray area here. We need to go and have a look, see what is happening in this practice that is causing these complaints. Where is the disconnect, or where is the non-compliance, or whatever the case is that is to be investigated. The most one, unfortunately, is the debt counseling without consent. Debt counseling related complaints now is the debt counsel without consent. That is a bit of a difficult one because there's two sides to it. The first side to it is the one that we are very well aware of, or where we have rogue debt counselors and call centers that have people's information already, and they make connection with them via telephone or email or whatever the case is, and then they sign them up without the explicit consent of the consumer, where they did not want to participate. They might have thought this is maybe a different process, like debt consolidation, or oftentimes there is a like a interest rate reduction project that is offered to them, and then people would obviously want to investigate. And they're all duped into giving their personal details if it's all not already with these rogue DCs. And they are definitely duped into giving their signatures. What we often see is that a person will ask permission for to draw your credit profile. And then you need to supply your signature. And then you supply your signature to these people, and it gets abused, and that you get signed up on debt counseling. So those are the ones that did not want to ever be on debt counseling had they known what they were dealing with. And then there are the others that maybe were just sweet talked over the phone about how wonderful debt counseling is and how it can provide all these solutions for you over a certain period of time. And I think the pros of it is a bit embellished, and the cons are not really explained. It's more like a fine print somewhere that you will have to deal with later. And these people voluntarily give their information because they want to be part of this wonderful thing called debt counseling, until they find out it's not what they thought it would be initially. Or once the person over the phone is relieved and sanity sets in and reasonableness sets in, or you discuss it with your partner, your spouse, then it's too late, then you're already there. So those processes are obviously handled different because from a legal stance, if you did give your consent, you did understand and you wanted to proceed and now like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore, there's a different process to follow. Then those who from the get-go did not give their express consent, that did not give their permission, those debt counseling processes actually legally did not even take place because they weren't a meeting of the minds. But that's a story for another day and how we deal with those things.
So can I ask then, Louise, if you get involved, I should be scared, right? If Louise is sending me emails and saying, listen, I'm getting involved with this complaint process, because I'm sure you get involved with quite the complex ones, or like you mentioned, where there's gray areas. Are debt counselors kind of viewed as friend or foe? Are we troublemakers, or are we the good guys? I suppose when it comes to monitoring, are you trying to s find solutions to these problems, or are you trying to catch the bad guys?
Well, monitoring per se is by definition is just us being the regulator. We're just regulating what is happening. In order to regulate, I need to know, I need to see what you are doing. And that's where the monitoring exercise comes in. So we ask on a letter for a list of documents pertaining to specific consumers that we select. And then we view the process from start to finish on that particular consumer, and was everything done according to the regulations? The regulations gives us a lot of detail. Regulation 24 gives us lots of detail on deadlines and certain time periods that need to pass and whatever has to take place, certain documentation and what must follow. So we look at these exact time frames. We look at these exact documents. Were they submitted to the right person at the right time with the right information? Did you, as a debt counselor, do what you said you will do? Are you executing your duties like you undertook to do? That is what we are looking for when we do monitoring. So for these guys that genuinely just do debt counseling to the best of their abilities, follow the act in as far as they know, you've got nothing to worry about. You're going to probably get a closure letter from us. Or here and there we say, listen, remember to please do this within 5 days. Remember to, like, because we a part of the letter where we highlight on this consumer, this was found to be a problem, this was found to be a problem. We also give the remedial action on that same letter to say, listen, this matter has not been referred to court. So please refer it to the court within the next 30 days or refund the consumer. Can't hold on to funds and you're not working, that type of thing. Or if this consumer suspended, then you must issue the necessary documentation that goes with it. Small things like that. So we give the remedial action. Once these remedial action does not take place, and it does not take place persistently, then the matter will be escalated. We understand there are so many variables of debt counseling. Well, because many times we will pick up these shortcomings and then the DC will respond and say, listen, it was a transfer file. I did not have this documentation. I had to wait for this person to respond. The consumer still had to pay before we could get a hold of the information, whatever the case is. So there are many mitigating factors that you can take into account to understand that, oh, we didn't follow it to the T, but here was the reason why. There was no malice there. It was just process. This is how long it took. We couldn't directly go to court. We were sorting out a reckless investigation, and that needed to be in the papers. Things like that. So, and then we understand, and it makes sense, because then it shows that you are working towards the best interest of the consumer. You are doing your duty in a correct fashion. So no, nothing to be concerned about. But when these non-compliances persist, or when they are such obvious, gross, negligent non-compliance, then it will warrant immediate action. Then we will consider saying, hey, okay, we're giving you one chance. You have 30 days to fix all of this. You don't do that within those 30 days, then we issue a compliance notice. And a compliance notice is a next level escalation that if you did not comply with this compliance notice, it has to go to the NCT. There's no way that we as the NCR can now revoke that non-compliance. If there's any dispute there, it has to be handled by the NCT. So that's what happened with the CollectNet matter. There was persistent non-compliance. We issued a compliance notice. And then even after that, we still said, listen, we're willing to work with you guys because it's not our intention to close businesses down. It's not our intention to revoke good debt counselors or good registrants from their position. We don't want to do that. So we allow ample opportunity for correction. When that correction does not come through and it does not come through consistently thereafter, then we have to look out for other stakeholders in the industry. We've got to look out for the consumers and other people involved that might get prejudiced by whatever the registrant is doing. And that is then why we it's necessitated to go to the NCT and ask for deregistration, ask for a fine, set an example, make sure the industry is aware that there is enforcement, there is accountability.
Louise, if there's a consumer out there listening and they want to know if a debt counselor is registered, but not knowing if the debt counselor's name, because I mean, debt counseling companies advertise, even though a debt counseling company cannot be a debt counselor, can they kind of go look somewhere for this type of information, and is it regularly updated?
Our website has all the details of every registrant under different categories. However, we have the information for the registrant, not for the business the registrant works with or works for or owns or whatever the case is. We work on the registrant per se, the DC per se, or the credit provider per se. So when on our website people are looking into the search engine for a specific debt counseling company, you will not find it. But if you do have the name or you have the registration number, you can search that way. Alternatively, you can scan through all of the various pages. There's unfortunately thousands if you really want to find out. The alternative is to contact us. You can pop us an email or phone into the office and just ask and say, listen, I know, Code van Venter is here, debt counselor. Can you check for me? And then we can immediately go and check or dummies for whatever. Is that a company that has a registered debt counselor, and then we can do the check for them. And then there's always Google, Google hardly ever fails. So if you looking for somebody, also try Google. However, Google can be confusing, so if you want to be sure, just give us a call.
Yeah, don't do debt review with dummies. Only listen to debt review with dummies.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say that if you are visiting, if you're a consumer listening and you're visiting a website or have see some sort of advert, you're looking for a reference number that says NCRDC and then numbers after that. That's very important. You're looking for that because that enables you to go to the NCR site and search for that to see whether they are still in business, are actually registered or not. It's very important because, unfortunately, in the world we live in, you want to make sure you're dealing with legitimate companies. So yeah, it's lovely that you have the database. We hope it gets expanded and expanded with all sorts of new functions and things over time. Yeah, okay. Love. A lot of people on that database, Louise, if you go there, it's one of the things I do, I think a bit too much. I go to the NCR's database. I suspect I visit it more than you do. And you check under debt counselors. There's a lot of people who used to be debt counselors and who haven't been removed as debt counselors. So it's not like you've had to take them to the NCT and review their registration or anything. But they've kind of lapsed being debt counselors. They've stopped being debt counselors. They've kind of dropped out of the industry. Why do you think? I mean, I would say it's about 3,000 people, I would guess, if I remember correctly. It's a lot of people. Why do you think that's happening at the moment or has happened over the years?
I think there are various reasons. I think, firstly, is that many debt counselors might be a very good debt counselor, but not such a great business person. It's one thing to be a debt counselor, you go for training and you find your feet in a few years' time, but that does not automatically make you the best CEO running your own company. Of course, if you do start up your own thing, you have to run your own business, and that's not necessarily in. For everyone. Like I would take myself as an example. I've many times said to my husband, like, if I had to go on my own, I would probably go study something first or go for a course because I have no idea where to start or where to finish. I might be a very good attorney, but I'm not so great at running a business. And I think lots of people don't always also have the discipline for that, you know? And one of the other reasons that I found when working for debt counseling companies is the copious amounts of admin work that goes with it. I don't think people always realize how much administration work, so how many much time you have to put in it per consumer. You know, if you're dealing with credit providers, you're on hold half the day trying to speak to people, following up, checking this again, drafting these papers. It's a lot to handle, and I don't think it is for everybody. Some of the other things I think people could maybe also, you know, after COVID, found it financially too hard, too difficult. They couldn't handle it, like many, many, many other industries and many other businesses. So I think that also maybe played a big part of it, that people would rather then go be employed in a fixed position where they are secure. Or even they themselves had to consider debt counseling, and then you cannot practice as a debt counselor if you're in that position. And then I would say a lot of people might just have burned out. You know, this is a very taxing industry. It's you deal with so much negativity and you deal with so much real hardships that people go through. As a debt counselor, you've got to hear people that are angry and disappointed and upset and been under tremendous financial pressure for probably an extended period of time going through something. And if you're a debt counselor, you work with people for a long time. You don't just deal with them today. You're going to deal with them ongoing. So you become, I think, involved in their lives because you are involved in their lives. Being a financial advisor, well, not advisor, but being somebody that deals with their finances a lot, you are intimately involved in their lives. And that might become too taxing for some people and they burn out and they choose maybe to go and do something a bit more emotionally lighter than this.
Louise, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier when it comes to monitoring the debt counselors. What is the aim of the monitoring over the debt counselors, and how often is this done?
We do monitoring on a quarterly basis. So on a quarterly, how can I say, our business, the NCR, is broken up into quarters, and certain things need to take place within every quarter. So we have quotas that need to be met and the minimum deadlines that the DTRC expects from us and that we have to account for if those are not done. So part of that monitoring is just to look at what debt counselors are physically doing on a day-to-day basis, considering their duties as a debt counselor towards consumers. Make sure they stay in line with the Act and the regulations. Make sure they act in the best interest of the consumers. And just make sure that when consumers also exit, that they all the necessary things have been done and that the consumer is taken care of once a Form 19 has been issued. But
So
for
help us,
them, je meer, though, like for them, meer weet.
yeah, no, I think that's nice. Help us get into the mindset of the NCR, and maybe even a little bit of food for thought for debt counselors. What's the biggest compliance issues that debt counselors want to avoid? What can they do so that they don't have to get a sternly worded email from Louise?
Stick to the fee guidelines. I would say that is probably our biggest issue is debt counselors taking advantage of the fee guidelines and not sticking to it. It has gotten better over the last few years. I can see people are falling in line. There's been some case law also that supports our vision, supports our standing on this, and we have been more strict in enforcing those fees upon the debt counselors. So I can see that the compliance is turning, there is more turning. But what we have found is the NCT fees. So debt counselors have an option to take matters to a magistrate's court or to the National Consumer Tribunal. The National Consumer Tribunal will then only take matters where there's full acceptances. So this implies that the DC must be very active in the negotiation phase to get to a fully accepted proposal. Not easy task, but it can be done, and I'm sure that all DCs strive for that, because once you have a fully accepted, you'll have a lot less trouble coming in the future. There's be a lot less opposition or counter proposals or stuff like that. So if you can really draft your proposal in such a way that there's full acceptances, it is just better for everybody involved. But that is just truly the case. So when those matters can be referred to the NCT, the fee for the NCT to grant an order is far smaller than the fee would be for an attorney to be appointed and take the matter to a magistrate's court, where there are full packs, court applications that has to be done, has to be in duplicate, this law guidelines, so the attorneys need to be involved. Some debt counselors do that on their own, but it's a very small percentage that is able to do that. And then the attorney has to appear, and the time frame is so much longer. So it does warrant a necessary avenue where there is not fully accepted proposals, where maybe some pro rata are just being difficult and it needs to be argued in court, or there's other issues that need to be dealt with. So yes, many matters warrant to be taken through to magistrate's court and for that fee to become applicable. But many that we have at the moment that we see could have gone to the NCT, but the debt counsellors chose not to do that. Why, I'm not always certain, but I would encourage all debt counsellors to review this and then to take the matter. Even if you've taken a large fee for in case you needed to go to the magistrate's court, that funds can just be redistributed on behalf of the consumer. It will never be lost fees. It's something that will benefit the consumer, and to have an order at the NCT is also to the benefit of the consumer. But I've also seen where large fees have been taken, large mean any amount larger than the NCT requires, and then the matter goes to the NCT. And that is a problem because there is a fixed fee in the guideline that says this is the maximum amount that you're allowed to charge for when matters is referred to the NCT. So that is something that the debt counsellors, I see a lot of debt counsellors still do. They still overcharge consumers when matters are taken to the National Consumer Tribunal. The second issue that we see that is quite often is the failure to issue matters at court or the tribunal. So within the time period requested. I know most debt counsellors chase this and they try to stick to the timelines. It's also to the benefit of the consumer, but many others are a bit too relaxed and maybe does not understand how impactful it could be if you do not take the matter, if you do not have an issued matter by the end of the 60-day period. So that is also something that we see that is quite a problem that creates further issues for the consumer later on. And then the third thing that we see a lot is the reckless credit fee. We see a lot of debt counsellors that charge reckless credit fees right off the bat from the Form 16, which is completely unfounded, because reckless credit can only be raised once you have sufficient information before you to have a reasonable suspicion that there might have been reckless credit granted by a credit provider. So you will need to have all the information from your consumer and your CVs, certificates of balance, to be able to see, but wait, I think there might have been a reckless credit here that was granted. So to have that fee charged at the Form 16 stage, it cannot be correct. You're speculating here. The second issue that we found with the reckless is that many times the reckless fee is paid, but we do not see the actual assessments or the actual investigation that take place, or the debt counsellor wants to break it up. And that is a problem, because a consumer has paid for this, and it needs to be investigated, because it might be the case that there's reckless. We live in South Africa, reckless is a very common thing, so that it might be that that person is that. So if you're battling to get cooperation from the credit providers, that is to be expected. But because there's resistance, does not mean you don't have to follow through. You still took the fee, you need to provide the work for that fee. And then the last thing with the reckless credit is that so many consumers are charged reckless, and then there are investigations done, but I hardly ever see any court orders on reckless. So there is this investigation done, but I don't see the result of that investigation. The purpose of the investigation is to find reckless, and if it's there, to have it pursued at court for that amount to be deferred or whatever the case is. But I don't, I cannot even say that I've seen one reckless order in the last 12 months. So that, yeah, is something that we need to have maybe get some attention to the debt counsellors, because I want to understand is why you do an investigation if you do nothing with it. If the consumer was maybe not this not honest, then reckless credit will obviously not apply. But that discussion could have been had prior to the fee being taken and prior to the investigation being done, because that is many, many, many times the case as well. And that is why, according to the Act, this the consumer that needs to raise the issue of reckless credit. The consumer needs to be informed that there is something as reckless credit, and then that consumer must say, "Listen, please, will you go and investigate this? Because I was truthful, so there must be a problem here." But if that's not the case, then no need for investigation, no need for a fee. That money can go towards the repayment of debt to the best interest of the consumer.
If a debt counselor is kind of a bit naughty and he wasn't 100% compliant on something, obviously the NCR are not going to just go ahead and send him to the NCT. You'll obviously give him a bit of time to fix it. And how often do you then follow up after you've given him notice to say, Meneer, you've been a little bit naughty?
When there is persistent non-compliance, or there is severe contraventions, fraud or reckless fees or stuff like that, then yes, then the matter needs to be dealt with on an escalated basis. So then you will either consider to do an investigation if there's a need to go and collect more information or evidence. Might be better to then rather pursue the avenue of an investigation in order to get more information, to get proper evidence that you can then view and then decide to take that matter to the NCT. The alternative is to issue a non-compliance. That is a letter of compliance notice to say, "Listen, you have this is your very, very last chance to take up the remedial action that we have suggested and to follow through and to make sure that whatever is the wrongdoing here is being corrected and whatever has been done can be mitigated." So if consumers were, for example, overcharged, to pay the fee back. So then there's a corrective measure that's taken place to balance things out. If that does not happen, then the matter will escalate to the tribunal, because then we will seek an order to have this person move as a removed as a registrant in order to protect other stakeholders and especially the consumers, and also to get some damages. Damage is not the right word. Also to get some compensation from these debt counsellors, so that an audit is done, perhaps to go and see what was has taken place. And for those consumers' situation to be rectified. And then also to be issued with a fine, because that these are the things that we don't have authority over to do. Only the tribunal could do that. So we need to convince them to issue an order to issue a fine so that there is a punitive measure as well against the debt counsellors to deter future debt counsellors from doing the same thing. So before like you reach that point of an order where that has been granted, you have had as a registrant would have had ample time to mediate, ample time to rectify. Many debt counsellors will find that something had gone wrong in their processes. Maybe somebody that works for them or works with them and that does not understand the process or took a chance, a bit opportunistic, whatever the case is, will come to us and say, "Listen, we have found A, B, and C." So before you do a monitoring exercise and see, "Oh, something is not right here," we are coming and we're disclosing it to you. And then that's wonderful, because that is the point of the exercise. If you see something that's not right and you come seek advice on how to fix it and you fix it, that is first class. That would be ideal. Again, it's the our mission is not to have registrant deregistered. Our mission is for people to do their work properly, to do it correctly, to do it to the benefit of the consumer. That is the ideal. And if debt counsellors work to the benefit of the consumer, the credit providers in turn will also cope. They will also work with them to reach to a good solution. So a lot of variables, but yes, from a debt counselling point of view, that is what we do. We try to rather fix the problem than just have punitive action.
Something that we see quite a lot at the moment is a lot of offers to help people sort out some sort of record of debt review? Because a lot of people, of course, over the years, a million people, 2 million people have entered this process, gone through it, and some have finished successfully. Well done to them. Others are still busy with it. Well done to them. And then others, perhaps for various reasons, haven't finished the process, and kind of that status hangs around a long time. What's the NCR's thought about people offering kind of let us sort out your credit record, give us some money, we'll sort things out. Is there a stance there that we should know about?
Okay, so debt review removal is how to get you removed from debt review, how to get your debt review flag removed. And so that's what you're asking about. Look, we don't really have an opinion on it. It's the Act and case law that dictates how that process will run. Now, initially, we only had Section 71 available to us, that way you have a clearance certificate, and that's the only way you can get out of debt review. But there is, of course, a loophole, and any good attorney will find one. And if you are listed under debt review without a court order that has declared you over indebted, you are able, in terms of the law, to approach a court and to make the court have a look at your application or consider your application and consider your financial situation. And from there, make a decision whether you are over indebted or whether you are not over indebted. If you are found to be not over indebted, you can ask the court to also include there for the NCR or whoever, any stakeholder involved, to have your credit or your debt review flag removed from your credit profile. So you are able to do that. If you do have a court order that has found you to be over indebted, you're between a rock and a hard place because there is no space in the National Credit Act for you to backtrack out of debt review there. And there is also no space in terms of the Magistrates Court Act for a rescission on that. There's certain specifications that need to be complied with for a rescission, and for a debt review does not fall within one of those options. So then you're in a very difficult place, and then you'll need to write it out and to get to your clearance certificate. So that is the process that is followed. There are many, many courts that are willing to look at your debt review application, even though you do have a court order. And if that magistrate, in his discretion, decides to issue a rescission on that order, we cannot argue with it. We have to comply with it. Alternatively, we have to go back to court and ask for a rescission of the rescission order and, explain and then convince a magistrate on why. And we believe you should be doing that. Unfortunately, we do not have the resources for that. And that's also not our intention, is to take on the judiciary and in their discretion. If they believe they can issue a rescission, we don't have an opinion on that. We comply with a court order that is provided to us. So that is what the current situation is.
Louise, we also kind of mentioned rogue debt counselors. These are obviously debt counselors that don't always have the client's best interest at heart. What is the NCR's challenge there, and how do they kind of deal with these compliance issues?
Well, as most of them, first thing needs to be identified, and they are largely identified via the complaints department. So when people have, consumers specifically, have problems with their debt counselor, it is imperative for them to file a complaint. I understand that the complaints department's inundated and the process is long and tedious, but it does serve a very greater purpose because it gives us a view on who these debt counselors are that are rogue or are taking advantage of consumers or defrauding, misrepresenting, whatever the case is. It gives us a clear picture, it gives us the exact consumers. So these are the consumers that we can go and investigate when we choose to investigate these debt counselors, because that would be the next step. From the point where we have these debt counselors identified and where we see all these complaints that go with them, we have reasonable suspicion, and then from there we can decide to initiate an investigation, gather more information, evidence, and then take the matter to the NCT or issue compliance notices, or whatever the case warrant. So there is the complaints department that assists us with the identification, And then we have an enforcement department, investigation enforcement department, and that is their sole purpose. They investigate complaints, but they can investigate not just debt counseling, all complaints related to the National Consumer Act and the National Credit Act. So they investigate, and then they will also decide based on the reports of these investigations whether they will take the matter to the NCT. So on any given day, one of them will be in the tribunal or another court busy dealing with enforcement action. And they don't just limit to the tribunal. They go to the High Court, they go to the Supreme Courts, they go to the commercial courts. So they are very much in line. The investigators are guys that work closely with the police, the Hawks. So yes, they are actively, that is their sole purpose, is to ensure that these rogue agents or rogue registrants are taken to task and they are held accountable.
Yeah, and I will just say, if you're listening, just because you got an email this morning in your inbox that looked like a spam email offering you a fake loan, doesn't mean that all credit providers are bad. And just because sometimes you hear stories about a debt counselor who was maybe misbehaving a little bit, doesn't mean all debt counselors are bad. These are the challenges we face. And numerically, we're talking about a small group of people that maybe pose challenges in the industry. And it's very nice to know that the NCR is keeping an eye on these things and is taking action to kind of address them. Now, Louise, if someone is listening and now they've learned a little bit about the NCR, they can see that you, as an organization, are very eager to kind of sort out any problems, but they're dealing with the problem of debt. Maybe they've tried a few things and it's not working out. What advice do you have for them if they're not sure of the way forward?
Firstly, that they're not alone. They are part of a vast majority of people that maybe publicly or secretly are also worried about the same things. They are very concerned about their livelihoods and their children and their families. They are definitely not alone. And it's definitely nothing to be ashamed of. We live in South Africa, me included. You go to shop, do groceries, and it increases almost bi-monthly. Things that small stuff, sugar and coffee and that things, everything just keeps going up. And at some point, the figures add up. It doesn't work out the way it did 6 months ago or a year ago. And you might have had plans for the future, and now you have to like reconsider those plans. It's hard. It's rough. But you're not alone. You're part of a vast amount of people that are in that same situation. So follow to that is don't ignore the problem. Be proactive about it. The sooner you do something about it, the better it can be dealt with later. And I understand that people are scared and are overwhelmed and they're not certain about processes or what to do, and you think you're just going to wait for the sheriff to come pitch up at your house. It's not always that bad. You can go to a debt counselor or even go to your credit providers and speak to them if you need time, if you need assistance. Like you mentioned before, not all credit providers are all bad. You're not all just a number to them. There are avenues for you to consider. So be proactive. That would be another thing that I would say. There are people that can really sincerely want to help you. And for me, maybe I'm old school, but I would say go to somebody in person. If you are going to discuss your financial situation with somebody, it needs to be somebody that you're comfortable with. You're going to be walking a long road with this person, and you're going to be entrusting a very large part of your life to this person. It needs to be somebody that you can at least look in the eye. That would be my advice because of the severity of the matter, is go and sit with somebody and be choosy. If you don't have to go to the first person that phones you or the first place that you go to, be choosy, be decide on somebody and ask around. There are success stories among the debt counseling community. I've seen some of them and how I've spoken to these people, how debt counseling has positively impacted their lives, how it's not just them, their kids, how their kids were taught for the past 5 years, you can't make debt, it's not an option. You grow up like that and you learn to live your life without debt. That is a major advantage to you if you're a young person. When you strike 18 and now you can open accounts and you go buy this and that. If you learn from your parents to see, like, listen, Rather save, be more selective. Do you really need this or you just want it? Reward yourself maybe at the end of the year for something. Work towards it. Don't just go out and buy or make debt. It really, really changes people's lives. And then that spills over to their family members and to their friends and their colleagues. And people see, like, yo, I know this guy's been driving that car forever. And now finally, he got a new car. Like, he really deserves it. It's positive, it's impactful. So it's hard because you are going under rehabilitation. So just like with any other issue that you need to be rehabilitated from, it's difficult. It's going to be long term. It's going to be a battle that you're going to fight on a daily basis. There's going to be sacrifices that you're going to make. But at the end, you should be so proud of yourself for reaching that point, for reaching that accomplishment, because it's not easy. Debt review is not easy, but it is so, so worth it. And you can still have a really great life while still being under debt review. It is really, really possible. It's just you got to get your mindset right.
And then when we look at the debt counselors and the credit providers, if you had one clear message that you can send to them today, what would that be?
Act in the best interest of consumers. For speaking to credit providers, I would say act in the best interest of consumers, because we are dependent on them. We're actually dependent on each other. Without consumers, there will not be a credit industry, and without the credit, there will not be credit providers. Without credit providers, there will not be debt counseling, and there will not be the NCR. So we're all actually dependent on each other in this economy to move forward. People are real; they are not just a number. Or an obligation or a responsibility to comply with. They have real issues and real lives, and how they are treated and how they are being dealt with directly impacts their lives and how they deal with their families and their friends and their jobs. And I don't think we will ever really know the impact of the harshness that can come from a credit provider. But not all are bad. That is not the case, and not all are just bad. I think it's more, it's a there's a very human element to it as well. But yeah, I would think that people need to be a little bit more cooperative, to be more kind. That's for humanity in general, but to act in the interest of consumers. There is a balance of rights for everybody. It's got to work for everybody. But I think if the focus is on what is in the best interest for the consumer, which is not always like an easy path, because debt review is not easy, but it's also to the benefit of the consumer. You've got to be still firm. But to be in their interest, to work towards and in their interest.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And before we let you go, I think it's about that time, Zach. Can I hand you the magic wand? Oh, there we go. Thank you very much, sir. I'll take that from you. So, Louise, yeah, the dummies, we've got a magic wand, and we're going to hand it to you now. And you've got the magic wand, and this magic wand gives you the power to change anything in an instant in the debt review industry. And you say it happens. What is that thing that you would change in the debt review industry, and it'll happen right now?
What would be the one thing? Oh man, education. I think if everybody could be more educated, especially the consumers, if consumers were more educated and their approach and what they do, I think that would go a long way. Better decision making will have better results. So I think if people can be more educated, yes. I think that will certainly help them in their lives and help the industry as a whole, and they will not be taken advantage of so easily.
Well, that's a lovely answer. Thank you, Louise. And thank you very much for spending some time with us dummies. We like to learn things, and it's nice to see the passion that you bring to the role that you have. And also just sharing general information there about the NCR and kind of what's happening behind the curtain, because sometimes we're on the other side of the curtain. So it's lovely to learn these things. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Corey, that was great. It's so nice, as mentioned, to talk to people who know what they're doing. And it was nice to spend some time with Louise there. I do feel a little bit smarter now that we spend time with her. And just also talking about the role of the NCR, it's not to be minimized. The NCR are critical to our industry, and they just make sure that If you're a consumer, you're not getting taken advantage of in some way. If you need to complain to someone, there's someone you can complain to. Like Louise said, sometimes that process takes a while, but it is there. And they also sometimes provide clarity for the industry when we're all a bit unsure about, like, what do we do about this thing? Sometimes the NCR can provide the guidance that we're looking for. So, yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, it was really fun to spend some time with Louise today. And as always, we want to thank Louise, our guest, with Zach. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you to our listeners. And we'll see you on the next episode of Debt Review with Dummies.
Da-da-da-da.